You're listening to World Watchers International over FM 102 KLRB. And now, here's May with part two.
Okay, we'll go back to some of those great stories, whatever happened to. The Valerie MacDonald story was important because the people that were suspected of murdering her, John Gordon Abbott, he's in a jail up in British Columbia, and his companion, one of the fellows, Mr. Hennessy, was murdered, but there was a Philip Thompson and John Gordon Abbott who are still alive. And they had in their possession the names of officers of banks that they could only get from the inside of the bank, a handful of five or six people in the bank that would have information of these officers. And they had file folders of the armored car companies and commercial firms that they served. And they were planned for robberies for United Parcel Trucks and Loomis and Brinks and cash collecting vans and the Hibernia Bank. And they had the home addresses of every driver and the name of their children and the social security numbers of the particular drivers and the driver's license numbers and the ages of the children and their school schedules. And they had the most minute details, which would show, like the SLA operation, that this large scam of robbing banks and sending money down to Nazi right-wing organizations in South America that then turned it into Nazi literature and cash and heroin and cocaine that came back to the United States that was recycled for more money and then guns sent back down to them. This operation was a large scandal, and this particular woman was murdered, and it involved politicians in San Francisco and former prison guards, and it's been in limbo this entire year, and a lot of the clues were available. A similar bank robbery took place, a Brinks robbery of a fellow in San Francisco who was a member of the Nazi Party who had gone down to Florida, and he was at the United Nations at a party. He took over $1 million, and he gave away about $100,000. When he came home, they compared him to Robin Hood. He'd been down Jacksonville, Florida, and the UN and fancy parties that gave money to people. And because he gave $100,000 away, he's getting a lot of soft treatment out here by the press as if he's a very great fellow who gave to the poor. They still haven't said where the other million and a half went or his role with the Brinks or how he got out of town. Last March, we were talking about Nugent Bank again on March the 8th. The important stories, one from the London Times on John Paisley, another Washington Post story by Maxine Cheshire, and Lee Edwards from The Globe and the San Jose Mercury. Very important articles, and again, linked to the Japanese mafia, to Tokyo, to William Colby, the part that would connect to Richard Allen with his contacts in Japan and to the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Department. All kept quiet, and not a word came out. March and February, March and April was a time of breaking down the international links of the Wells Fargo missing millions, which, again, the lid was put on. Money gone from the Beverly Hills Bank, the Palisades Bank, the Hollywood Wilshire branch, and Marina Del Rey, and Harold Smith again saying it was the Japanese mafia. And shortly after that, as many stories came out, the Japanese mafia boss, Mr. Teoka, was murdered. This was in July of this year. And in March and April, the Wells Fargo story was very big. The role of the Falcon and the Snowman, that's Christopher Boyce, appeared. He surfaced up in was Port Angeles, right near across the water from Victoria's, up in Washington in Port Angeles. And the book Falcon Snowman is about Boyce, the double agent, the CIA man, and again, I believe that his Palos Verdes links to the Wells Fargo Bank could be established. He was apprehended and taken to a federal prison, and now he's back in California, I believe at Lompoc, but he was learning to fly an airplane and was ready to leave the country. He stayed at an Idaho safe house. The woman was charged for harboring him, and then she was released, just as the Mickey and Jack Scott were never charged with taking Patty Hearst. In these major conspiracy cases where it is a crime to harbor somebody who is under indictment or has escaped from prison, these people who take care of them, who have the CIA safe houses, are released from all charges, as happened, say, with the Scots and with the woman who had Christopher voice. I talked about not only the Nugent Hand and the CIA Bank, the Castle Bank that was set up originally before the money went to Australia to the Nugent Hand Bank, but some examples of missing millions and billions of dollars that have been floating around. Now, there are articles at the end of this year in New York Times, Wall Street Journal, on our banks folding, the savings and loans collapsing, financial crisis in banks. But nobody makes any connections to the major banks that collapsed or where the money went or who was tampering with the banking system. So last March, I gave some examples of Richard Nixon's friend C. Arnold Smith with his U.S. National Bank that folded, $200 million scandal. The bank house in 1974 in Germany, $200 million gone. In October of 74, the Franklin National Bank, the $45 million that was siphoned off by Michael Sindona of the Vatican. In 1977, the Swiss Credit Bank, $800 million gone. The Chase Manhattan Bank in Switzerland, $400 million gone. I did many programs this past year, 1981, on the missing million. And the reason I was concerned was that this is the way that Japan and Germany funded the regrowth of their countries after World War II by taking millions and billions of dollars of cash, of gold, of counterfeit money, salting it away, and then bringing it back for particular businessmen to set up corporations all over the world to be sure they controlled newspapers, radio stations, hotels, airplane companies, and so forth, so that all the major industries would be controlled by people who had salted this money away that, in quotes, is missing, but has to be somewhere, and somebody is going to be using it for their purposes. You can be sure of that. Now, there was a very large story last March that just died in limbo, a New York Times story, and also in the Globe, on the heels of an accused con man, Eduardo Rabi, R-A-B-I, who used the name Jack Bender. There was a Nazi named Bender who also had the German name of Sven. I can't find out if this Jack Bender is the same as the Sven. There was a Bender who helped form Israel. This fellow was an Israeli also. He had passports from different countries and had citizenships and false identities. He could travel all over the world. He was in New York and Switzerland and France, Monaco, Italy, Canada, Paraguay, Uruguay, working with down in Paraguay with Dr. Joseph Mengele's. He left $14 million there behind for Mengele's and for Uruguay. He had $14 million he left behind. He was wanted on a $60 million swindle. There was $1.4 million missing in Toronto, $14 million of it paid out in Paraguay, $50 million lost from a Swiss insurance company, and $300,000 to $70,000 out of Beverly Hills, diamonds, and so forth. Now, many times through this past year, and I've been charting it as much as I have time to do, the name of the bank, the city, the date, the amount of money, and the countries involved, and the people to see, and I have added up several times how many missing millions and billions of dollars. And unless we know where it's going, we can't really plan a very stable future or figure out why situations are being destabilized. People come into the major cities and plunk down cash, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 homes, $2 million homes. The real estate market is crazy. The banks are unsettled. The savings and loans are going under, as I say. The financial system in this country is really in chaos for many, many reasons. But the large amount of money taken from these banks that is unaccountable is outrageous. There was another story, a financial scandal that rattles the Pacific, that was about Billy Lee, and it had to do with the San Francisco Bank and $18 million that was taken out of the Hollywood National Bank and Hong Kong investments. Again, the Japanese garment industry with Mitsubishi, Hong Kong investments, and textile companies, January the 9th, 1981, $100 million. They believe $70 million to $100 million was taken, the largest ever taken out of Philippines. It involved Vancouver, British Columbia, and Haiti. A lot of money floating around. The Philippines are in debt to the United States, $10 billion in debt. And I mentioned last week how Poland is in debt so much they have interest of $450 million this week and don't have a cent, yet the money poured into there. Where did it go? Did it go to it didn't go to factories. It didn't go to housing. It didn't go for supplies or farms. Where did the billions go into Poland that are not seen? Some friends believe it went to the Catholic Church so that after the martial law comes and maybe the communists overturn, then the money will be sold away for certain particular people to become wealthy and to run the country. That it's salted away and hidden now, and it was sent by the Western banks. But in the meantime, the interest is due, and it's unaccountable for. Well, the same way the Philippines has a $10 billion debt to the United States. We citizens have to pay the debt if they can't. So they take all their capital out of the country and say, whoops, we don't have any money. In the meanwhile, it's hidden someplace. It doesn't make a bit of sense, and I don't see how it can keep on and on. But the articles that I have are from papers such as the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the financial sections, and the news sections. And it seems that these things are happening. San Francisco had robberies. $45 million was missing last year, and there were 800 cases of embezzlement. In March last year, I did 1 hour book review of Best Evidence by David Lifton. That was on the murder of John Kennedy. Lifton was a good researcher. He worked 15, 16 years. He got sucked in. He did a rotten book. It's a perfect example of how a good mind can be seduced by forces around you to produce something that is terrible and not what started out with your intent to be the definitive book on the John Kennedy assassination. It was a big brouhaha in Time magazine. It made the Book of the Month Club. There is hardly a researcher that thinks it's worth anything, and it kind of ruined the reputation of David Lifton. People were waiting to see what he produced, and I did a broadcast on what was wrong with the book and went down many points, but one of the points was that he had to prove something to the CIA and to Wellesley Liebler that their innocence in making mistakes on the Kennedy assassination came from mere ignorance, not complicity as criminals. And that's where Lifton went wrong. The CIA covered up the murder of John Kennedy. They seduced Lifton to become neutralized. Their intent was never honorable. There was not information that they didn't have access to. They destroyed evidence of the murder. They locked up evidence of the murder. They lied under oath. They didn't call the right witnesses. And where Lifton went wrong was that he wanted to say, well, there was a conspiracy, but you guys just didn't get the point because there wasn't this material available then, but you meant well. And when he gets to that point, he's over the brink. He may as well walk the plank and sink. You lose a major researcher because he has human flaws, and they got to him. And that's what happened to David Lifton. In March of last year, I talked about the top dogs fighting. That was one of my favorite broadcasts of 1981. It was on Sunday night, and I defined Alexander Haig and his fight with Richard Pipes and Richard Allen and Mr. Casey and Walter Stessel. Walter Stessel was on Face the Nation today, interesting program, talking about Poland. He was our ambassador to Poland, our ambassador to Germany. He was our ambassador to the Soviet Union when Lee and Marina Oswald were in Navy intelligence. Well, that was March 29th, and the program, I've referred to it many times, the top dogs are fighting, and I was talking about Alexander Haig and his role to the assassination teams. And the very next morning, Ronald Reagan was shot, and there was Haig saying that he was in charge. And ever since then, Mr. Allen and Mr. Casey and Pipes and Stessel and Haig and Ronald Reagan have been fighting with each other. Before John Lennon was shot and before Ronald Reagan was shot, I was telling you on this program that this action would be taking place, and it did very shortly, 24 hours later. Sometimes it takes a year for something to happen that I talk about, or 2 years, but as luck would have it, the timing and the space for them to do what they were going to do had to be at those moments, actually, because there's a certain desperation about these people, and that's one of the things that makes studying this news so interesting. What's interesting about it is how frail the leaders are, such as Lyndon Johnson and Gerald Ford or Jimmy Carter or Ronald Reagan. We have no leadership, or the desperation that Great Britain puts in Margaret Thatcher when so many people hate her. The only countries where the leaders can look at you eyeball to eyeball and make sense are the countries that came in this last year, such as Mitterrand in France and Papandreou in Greece, or even Brezhnev in the Soviet Union. And Gaddafi, who people think is crazy, he can say Ronald Reagan is an actor and a liar. I'm a revolutionary. And all three are true. And there's something about Gaddafi when you see him and hear him that I don't believe he's as crazy as certain writers want you to believe, or that he's deranged. There's something about him when he talks that makes sense. If you don't want to believe it, just forget it and say he's crazy. But his actions will hold up. In the meanwhile, people like Reagan they're fighting Allen and Mr. Meese. Edwin Meese is going to leave the administration shortly. He's ready to get out. And Mr. Deaver said that he's leaving, and Lynn Nossiger is leaving. And there's a lot of people shaky on that ship. As I mentioned last week, Lenore Annenberg left. It's a crazy group of people, and it's fun to watch them because they're so frail and they're so rotten. I got a nice Christmas present, the Ronnie and Nancy Reagan paper dolls, and I hope I have to get another set, because one I'll keep intact and the other I want to cut up and play with. They're so cute, and I can change their costumes. And she has a little bell that says Evita Perón on it, and he has a library with the Beverly Hills Diet and some rotten easy books, easy economics, and so forth. I love the paper dolls, and I think it would be a ball to play with them because, as I say, they're so vulnerable and they're so rotten, and the people around them are so rotten. If you've studied them 18 years like I have, the news isn't sad to read because there is the balancing power opposing them. Now, before I go on to some more of the broadcast here, I might mention Walter Stessel tonight on Face the Nation, the former ambassador to these various countries, Poland and Germany. He was so mild, you might even want to send for the program to read it. Butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He didn't say a word against the Soviet Union. He was supposed to be talking about Poland. I couldn't get a sentence that made sense. Starting last February and March, they were going to wipe Poland off the earth, that communism couldn't exist. They'd have to change their form of government, Mr. Richard Pipe said, and Allen. And they were accusing them of being killers and terrorists. And the Soviets would respond, well, you killed the president of Panama, the president of Ecuador, and you killed John Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And they're getting very verbal the first time that the Soviet Union, or even Gaddafi, but particularly the Soviet Union, is listing the crimes that these people did and answering them. And they're looking like statesmen compared, say, to Alexander Haig or Ronald Reagan. And our allies are getting scared of us, and they're sort of clinging together. And Walter Stessel couldn't lash out about what was happening because the Soviet Union came in and picked up documents of the CIA planning a coup to get rid of the communists in Poland, the CIA interfering. And a friend of mine who was on this program with me a while back, Lydia Blades, listens to shortwave radio, and she picks up what Moscow is saying about papers that were left around, the telltale papers such as we had in the embassy in Iran, and the papers in Poland. The CIA and the Solidarists were to put 80,000 people into jail. They were planning a major coup, and they were funded with strategic plans, details of the CIA. And so Mr. Stessel has to sit there, and Great Britain and France and Italy and the Netherlands and the various countries have to listen again to an American blunder and accusations going back and forth. And we're on very tender ground here. We're going to have to pull back. We've poured billions of dollars into Poland, and it's not going to work. We're making fools of ourselves again. So while some of this news is bad, and I know it's bad, it's interesting. In April, and we'll just have a few more months, a resume of 1981, I talked about the Zodiac killings in California. They were trying to make the Zodiac link to the murders in Santa Cruz and Mount Tamalpais. Then they brought in a poor guy named Mr. Carpenter. I don't know whether he did or didn't do the murders, but all the hearings are top secret. Again, every time there's a major conspiracy, there's hoods over their heads, there's silent hearings, there are legal technicalities that draw them out for 1 and 2 years. And interesting enough, at the end of this year, I mentioned a new article in California Magazine on the code of the Zodiac killing, making it a very complex military intelligence operation out of London. And I mentioned on these programs, I think that's linked to Charles Bates and the FBI in London. And the first attempt was to bring out the Zodiac, that tired old Zodiac. He's like Carlos the terrorist. Whenever the CIA wants to spread fear or terror or murder among the native population, they'll pull out the old Zodiac letters, or in Europe it's Carlos, or they try to bring Carlos over here now to do terror. After April, there were new articles on Ronald Reagan surgery, and that shooting took place March the 30th and April the 5th and the 12th and 19th. I did quite a bit on Ronald Reagan and the similarities to the John Kennedy assassination and the attorney Edward Bennett Williams, for the attorney for the Hinckley family, who represented Bobby Bakers and Lyndon Johnson, Joe McCarthy and John Connally, and again, all of Richard Allen's friends and Richard Allen's links to Robert Vesco and organized crime. The man who tried to kill Ronald Reagan had base through his attorney to the mob figures, to the Nazi party, to the George Bush family. And interestingly enough, as I say, it's been almost a year. This is the end of this year, 1981. The shooting was in March. There hasn't even been a trial. And we really haven't heard Mr. Brady say one word, just a little gibberish, or see him walk. This poor guy had his brains blown out and has gone through terrible problems this year. And in order to make the trial very easy on John Hinckley Jr., they want you to think that Mr. Brady is very happy and laughing all of the time. There were links of John Hinckley Jr. to possibly to Joseph Franklin, the fellow that was indicted in Utah, for the murder of black men with white women. And they never went further into the killings that he did. He was in Lockland, Florida, Florence, Kentucky, Charleston, West Virginia, Fort Wayne, Indiana. There were a list of cities like the Cromer trial in Oakland. And none of these were investigated. He was supposed to have shot Jordan, and that trial never was investigated to see if, in fact, he was the man who shot him. These trials are hushed up at the highest level. They're never pursued. The threads are never gone into. The defense and the prosecution work out a deal. And the overlapping links of John Hinckley Jr. to Joseph P. Franklin seemed quite common in a lot of cities, and common, of course, that was covered up. And I did quite a few broadcasts, one in particular in April, on the background of Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney for John Hinckley Jr. Incidentally, he's the attorney for Marvin Davis, who purchased 20th Century Fox and the Pebble Beach Corporation. And that includes Henry Kissinger and Anna Chenault of the Flying Tigers on the board, and Grace Kelly from Monaco. And the old mob gang have incorporated, and they have purchased this big hunk of real estate up here in Pebble Beach. And then this last week, there was an announcement that Melvin Belli, always described as the flamboyant attorney, has moved to out here to Pacific Grove in California. This town is getting a little crowded for me, having Jack Ruby's attorney over there on Pebble Beach and Pacific Grove, and working in California and using the Monterey courts will be very interesting. He's more than flamboyant. He is an entire era. You take all of his clients, Mrs. Hermann Göring and the Errol Flynn family with their Gestapo connections, and Jack Ruby. He's quite a character, this Melvin Belli, and he's going to be on the peninsula in a law office over here in Pacific Grove. I did some broadcasts in April on the John Hinckley family, John Hinckley Jr.'s links to the Nazi organizations, to World Vision. World Vision also had a lot of activity and money in Poland. They're in about 83 countries. They're linked to the CIA. They're the the Feed the Poor CIA, Turn the Natives Christian, give them a little grain in exchange for a prayer organization. And John Hinckley's father was active in that organization. He probably still is. I did many broadcasts on the SLA intermittently, not constantly, but attended the trial of Russell Little, SLA member. That was moved from up north down here to Monterey in Salinas, Monterey County. And he killed Dr. Foster just several weeks before Patty Hearst was kidnapped. That trial was a real farce. I took extensive notes and would like to buy the transcript sometime. It was no trial at all, and the prosecution and the defense all had a lot of laughs together. It was disgusting, but it was interesting to see it and to see how the system works on a day-to-day basis. And, of course, he was acquitted, and he had been heavily involved with the SLA and gets on the stand and says he doesn't even know what it was. And then when he was acquitted, then he says he knew what it was, and they don't bring him back for a hearing. I did a lot of background material on Alexander Haig last May, on his the vicar of our U.S. foreign policy, his graduation from West Point, then going with Douglas MacArthur and Chiang Kai-shek and into Taiwan and into the War College, and Haig's links to the very far right, the group that, as I say, wants to build up, that have built up Poland, that are anxious for this World War III. I don't think that even though they want it, they will be able to pull it off. I think that the anxiety of Ronald Reagan, and I said this before when 1981 started, the anxiety of Reagan and the people around him to be commander-in-chief of this great force with Alexander Haig out there with his spear and dagger leading us to this glorious war against the Soviet Union, this dream that they've had for so long, kind of fizzled. They went too fast in too short a time, and too many people got scared. The people that would have to fight the war, the people that would be our allies. And I see us now just hanging in limbo as we were at the time of the Iranian crisis, and our allies are watching us. And they're not excited about Poland, as I say, going in and breaking up the solidarity. They know it was all CIA, and we didn't achieve what we wanted, and they're not going to put their finger in it too much. There's an article in the paper today that the sanctions that Ronald Reagan wants against the Soviet Union won't work, and he may try to put them on our allies. He tried to tell them to stop buying oil from Iran, but they bought oil from Iran. My throat is dry. I'm sorry. Now, 1981, I've only covered you to 6 months, 5 months of 1981, was an interesting year. It was a sad year because events went so fast we couldn't keep up with them. But these events will be recurring in 1982. But, I'm losing my voice. I had the flu last night. I guess it's getting me now. These events will go on into 82 because they were unfinished in 81. And so we'll see them continue every week and follow them as they progress. I really am losing my voice. Maybe we better say, I'll see you next week. We'll take 1 minute short. This is Mae Brussel, and I'm sorry this is happening, but we'll have to stop now, and I'll come back with you next week.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.